This is the Medicast Live, recorded on January 13th, 2009, and released in the podcast on January 19th, 2009.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters!
This is the Medicast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the Podmedic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Medicast Live, recorded earlier this week. And I want to remind all of you that the next episode's coming up on February 10th. We're going to be talking about humor in EMS, so I want you to get all your funny EMS stories together, and there'll be more about that posted on the Medicast blog. Make sure you check out all the links in the show notes for this episode, and I want to thank a couple of our special guests that came in and helped me out. If you'll notice, as you listen to the show, I had a really nasty cold crop up. It only lasted for a day. But of course, that day was the day we recorded the show. So I want to thank Kelly Fujikawa, who came on and carried some of the load by answering questions and helping to fill in when I needed to cough and hack and groan in the background as I shut my mic down. And also, I want to thank Chris Montero. He's from the EMS Garage podcast. If you haven't checked this discussion and panel show out, you really should give it a shot. It's a great podcast and just another in a great series of EMS podcasts that we're seeing coming out here recently. And it's great to have more company out there on the web. So I want to thank all of them for helping out, plus everybody that chatted in the chat room. It was really great to have everyone there as always. I want to welcome everybody that has joined us in the chat room. It's going to be great fun to have everybody here with us. And I'm hoping that we can have a nice discussion about what we can look forward to in the new year for EMS and emergency medical services. So we'll be talking a little bit more about that shortly. But first, I want to remind everyone that the Medicast is a member of the brand new ProMed Network. ProMedNetwork.com is your one-stop source for medical media for you. It is media aimed primarily at medical professionals in all sorts of the medical arena. So everything from physicians, nurses, EMTs, paramedics, allied health professionals, and other areas all can find that information at the ProMed Network. So without further ado, I will go ahead and get the show kicked off here with some of my own predictions. And then I'm going to open up the phone lines and bring some of the folks in the chat room in. So if you're in the chat room, feel free to go ahead and throw some of your predictions out there. And if you'd like to call in as well, go ahead and call in on the chat line, on the phone line. It's 724-444-7444. And then enter the call ID 18174. And you can follow the recorded instructions there. You'll be up and running and squared away, and we'll be able to bring you on the call. First off, there's been a lot going on in the country, obviously, involving economics. And I think that we're all feeling the pinch as well as our services over the last year tried to struggle with rising fuel prices. But that seemed to have turned around a little bit. And so my prediction for 2009 is that fuel prices are going to be staying around where they are. And I think that we're going to see less demand on some of our resources for fuel, and we'll be able to funnel some of that money back into other areas of the EMS businesses. But we're talking about predictions, 2009 predictions for emergency medical services. One of mine is that I think that the economy, one of the good things about the economy, and I think we all can agree on this, is that the reduced fuel prices all the way around makes all of us breathe a little easier. But as far as medical changes, what are we looking at? One of the things that I think we're going to see a lot of, one of the issues that came up this past year has been the move to require everyone to have high visibility gear, and that it meets a certain ANSI standard, ANSI standard, that says that there has to be a certain amount of reflective tape of a certain size on people's gear when they're working near or on a roadway. And we've probably seen that change enter the the marketplace in our highway crews, but it's also impacted a lot of us in the field as well. One of the challenges that's come to my attention is that we have people with a lot of challenges getting that ANSI standard right. And one of the issues is that they're putting the label in there. And I think a lot of companies and businesses don't realize that it's up to the individual company, as far as a fire company or emergency medical services organization, to test whether it meets the standard or not. It is not up to the manufacturer or the person that's selling you the coat. And this is a bit of a challenge, because apparently labels are cheap and you can put an ANSI standard label in your coat without having to back it up with anything. So if you're involved in purchasing for your organization, or you know somebody who is, you should really make sure that they get a hold of that ANSI standard and, you know, read it and understand it, and then get a measuring tape out and check. You may be surprised that that new gear you just spent a lot of money on may not meet that standard. So that's one of the challenges I think is going to kind of snowball here in probably 4 to 6 months, as organizations that went out and spent thousands of dollars on new gear come to find that their gear is no longer compliant. So we're going to be talking about that. Shirley in the chat room brought up that she thinks there'll be less line of duty deaths in the firefighter and EMS field. And I think that that's a great prediction. I'd like to see that it comes true. We've had a lot of challenges with aeromedical accidents this year. And one of the things that came up to me as I was doing some research on aeromedical accidents was that we were probably focusing a lot on the numbers without actually realizing that there are a lot more aeromedical services in action this year than there were the previous year. And that number has been climbing every year, as more and more hospitals see that that is a revenue source for their cardiac services and their other critical care services. They are putting helicopters in the field, and really, it may not be as high a number proportionally as we might think when compared to past years. So I'm hoping, however, even though that might be the case, that there will be a reduction in line of duty deaths related to aeromedical accidents and medevac accidents. Certainly here in the state of Maryland, we're still kind of reeling from the crash of the Maryland State Trooper paramedic medevac unit that killed a pilot, two EMS providers, and a patient in the back. So it is something that we struggle with here in our community, as well as a lot of communities around the country. So I'm interested to see what you in the chat room have to say. And I see one caller on the line. So I'm going to bring Kelly up, our good friend Kelly out in California, and we'll see what she thinks is coming her way in her service. So as we open up the phone lines and bring Kelly in, Kelly, how you doing? Can you hear me, Kelly?
Okay, let's try taking off my headphones. Apparently that is predicted not to work.
Oh, it's going to be one of those nights. Apparently we're going to predict that this is going to be one of the rougher Medicast lives.
Well, let's get it all out up front.
So, Kelly, you know, as I go down my list, and I have some other things to hit on here, I thought I would bring you into the conversation a little bit. What are some of the things that you're thinking about as you look forward to 2009? Is there anything you're hoping to see in your service? I know you're involved with Ski Patrol and Search and Rescue, so you're probably square in the middle of your big year.
Yeah, along the lines of what they were saying earlier, line of duty deaths, I see a prediction for improved safety culture. So people are more thinking about safety as just innate to what they do versus something they actually actively have to think about and occasionally forget. So not so much Yahooing.
You know, that's always a challenge, because people tend, at least in my area, and I'm sure this is no different, we seem to forget that we're just people too, and that we're not immune to the same issues and mistakes that cause other people injury and death. And so we tend to be a little more relaxed sometimes about our own safety. Do you find that to be the case?
Yeah, I do. And I think with an improved, like, just overall safety culture with you and your team, there's a more comfortable atmosphere for your partner to keep you in check. Hey, buddy, is that the best way to be going about that? Hey, you know, you want a backup, you need a hand, et cetera. So maybe you should step back to that before you attempt that, and maybe we can think of a safer way to go about it. So you can use the team as a safety check, too, and yourself innately, you'll think more often about it.
You know, it's interesting you say that, and team approach, because I think we're going to see more of a team approach as we move into the new year for all kinds of things, including safety. I know that one of the things we're focusing on in my local fire service is to focus on the fact that everyone needs to be a quote-unquote safety officer, that we need to have eyes on each other and eyes on our surroundings and make sure that we are very aware of the kind of dangers and things that are going on around us. And it's going to, you shouldn't just wait and assume that an officer or a safety designated safety observer is paying attention to every little thing. It's something that we all need to be willing to step up and shout loud and clear that stop, nobody move. This needs to be adjusted before we go any farther.
Yeah, I think a prediction for a safer 2009 is always a good one.
Well, let's hope it comes true, and it's something that we all work towards, and it's one of the reasons I end every show with talking about scene safety and BSI, body substance isolation. It's because I think that we need to keep safety in the forefront. You know, there's a reason that we make sure that we're always thinking about safety, and if we're not, maybe we should be trying harder, because whenever I read about a line of duty death, some of them are unfortunate accidents, but in some cases, I'm often shocked sometimes because someone has taken an unnecessary chance, and we get into sometimes that hero culture where, you know, we have to be the one that goes and does the dangerous thing. But unfortunately, all we end up doing is creating another emergency on top of a difficult situation that's already in place. And I'm sure that that's something you train people and work with people about as well, Kelly.
Yeah, definitely.
So one of the other things I came up with, and Kelly, I'll leave your mic open, so feel free to jump in.
Okay.
One of the things that I also came up with was that one of the issues that came up right at the end of 2007 and into 2008 was a change in the National Registry standards for accreditation for paramedic training. And that caused a lot of consternation. I think there was a lot of misunderstanding about it, but I think that it settled down somewhat. And so I look for that change to now start to be implemented on a more a broader basis. So there was a 5-year window given for organizations, colleges, academy programs, and fire departments to come into compliance with the accreditation requirement by the National Registry. And I think that we're going to see that move into place more. And what does that mean for you all out there that are taking your test or thinking about becoming a provider or in school now? Well, if you're in school now, probably nothing's going to happen. If you're about to take your test, nothing's going to happen. If you're an existing EMS provider, it shouldn't affect you that much at all. You're grandfathered in under whatever program you have that got you your National Registry patch. But what it does for all of us, what that kind of program does for all of us, is it brings additional respect and credibility to the emergency medical services, and particularly the highest level at paramedic. And one of the things that I think that we miss is that right now, a lot of our programs are essentially certificate programs. They're not a whole lot different from your nursing assistant programs or your medical front office professional programs. You see these certificate programs in local community colleges or even in high school vocational technical programs. And I don't have anything against those other programs and other career fields, but I think that the only way we're going to advance EMS to become viewed more and more as members of the medical professional community is to make it so that we are indeed
having a requirement to be accredited. And in most cases, I think we have to have a requirement to have some sort of a degree, whether it's an associate's degree or a bachelor's program attached to our certification and licensure. And so when that happens, that brings all of us up in the eyes of the public and in the eyes of the rest of the medical community. So if anybody has any thoughts about that or something to add, feel free. But I'm hoping that, that process continues and we see more and more advanced certification challenges put in front of some of our paramedics so that they can you know, expand their knowledge and move into other things. Now, guest five is saying, but we need motivation to get the degree. And I agree with you in most respects there. Low pay offers no incentive, and you're absolutely right. And that brings me back to a dismal part of my predictions for 2009. I always try to hold out hope that our local, because so many of our EMS services are attached to local public safety agencies, our pay is attached to government funding. And when that government funding is tightened up because of reduced tax income and reduced revenues coming into our state and local governments, we end up paying the price along with a lot of other government employees as they start to tighten their belts. And so I don't really see 2009 being that year where the pay starts to break out. And that's going to be a difficult challenge for a lot of local agencies and a lot of EMS services, because we are continuing to see a shortage of EMS providers and a shortage specifically of advanced EMS providers, EMTIs and EMT paramedics, because I don't think that there's going to be the pay there to attract people into the business of EMS. And I don't think there's going to be the pay there to keep and retain the high quality professionals we have. And so I think we need to find some way to supplement what we do or to encourage our local agencies to change the way we're compensated. Whether that means privatizing what we do a little bit more, that may be. But it's something that we really shouldn't be attached to public safety as much as we are. We probably should be more attached to our local health services. And when you look at what somebody makes coming into a situation like an ER tech with very little training, they can make more money as an ER tech than they can as an EMT, despite the fact that an ER tech will start off with a lot less training than your average EMT has. So this is going to be something that really is causing us all a challenge. Guest five brings up calling us medical professionals. Well, you know, I consider us medical professionals. I think a lot of us consider ourselves medical professionals. And I don't think the problem necessarily lies within the medical establishment so much, at least in the emergency department. I think for the most part, we're viewed as colleagues. And when I talk to our local medical director, talk to the nurses in the emergency department, you know, they consider us coworkers just like they consider everybody else they work with in the emergency department coworkers and other medical professionals. They trust our judgment. They trust our viewpoint when we call in on the radio, and they value our opinions and like to train alongside us. So I think you're right when you say that we need to get away from public safety, because public safety is what I think sometimes drags us down. And I have nothing against fire departments. I have nothing against the police departments, but it's very difficult for all of us in the emergency medical services to take patients to the ER and, you know, hand them off to a nurse who it has training that's only slightly more than what a paramedic has. And that training is different, but the amount of training in most cases, at least for an associate's degree program RN, is looking at something that's only slightly more training than a paramedic has, and yet they will make three or four times what a paramedic makes in some cases. So it's very challenging. And I agree that how do we get people to go on and get advanced degrees? Well, some of us are going to go ahead and do it and find a way to do it. And, you know, something that local governments can do is they can, maybe they can't pay us as much more, but maybe they can work out a trade program within the local community college where we're able to take a certain number of credits for free over a period of time, giving us the opportunity to add classes and line ourselves up for a degree program. That's something that can be done without actually necessarily spending the dollars. It's a perk, but it's a perk that adds on to you, because you can take a degree and do a lot of things if you decide to leave the EMS business. Once you have that piece of paper, you can advance it to other things if you have the desire to do so. And so that's a hope. Kelly, what's the prognosis in your area for providers and members of your service? I know your ski patrol service is a volunteer organization. Is that right?
Well, we have both. We have people that primarily come up on the weekends to reinforce the paid staff that works there all week long, and so we work hand in hand with the paid staff. The prognosis is, I think, more of the same, unfortunately. In California, we have a special situation where there really isn't very much privatized emergency services. It's all handled by the fire department. So there's always a wealth of supply of EMTs into ambulance services, and there's such high turnover that they just don't get paid well. And there's such a limited supply of the really good, high-paying fire department paramedic jobs that most people get left out in the cold and end up in those low-paying jobs. They don't really see the emergency EMT as a path of a career. Plus, the cost of homes out here in California just always continues to be higher than all of the rest of the United States, yet most ambulance technicians get a minimum wage here with barely any benefits. So I hate to be so gloomy, but I just predict more of the same, because I don't see anywhere where it's going to get any better.
Well, I don't think it's being gloomy, to be honest about things, Kelly. I agree with you. That's a challenge that we run into in a lot of places. You look at the big metropolitan areas on the East Coast, and so many of them have requirements for city employees that they must live within the city limits. Baltimore in Maryland is one of those cases. Philadelphia in Pennsylvania is another that from time to time tries to enforce that law. And of course, the minute they do, everybody quits and says, well, if that's a requirement, I'm not going to sell my house. I'm not going to move into the city because I my kids are in school somewhere else, or whatever the challenge is. And the cost of living in most cities is a lot higher for to have a house of any size, or even an apartment of any size. And so what ends up happening is within a year or so, the cities relax those requirements because they have to go out and hire new people. And they don't hire the people back all the time. They have to go through the trouble of training new people to fill positions. It becomes, again and again, it becomes a revolving door that just adds to the costs. When you have to retrain people or train new people, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And I don't know who's minding the purse, but it always boggles my mind when I see that news story come across in this region, because it seems like we're just doing more of the same. So I think that I agree with you. I don't know how people expect to have people performing important services like those that we do when they aren't willing to pay people a living wage to do it. And yet they're going to call 911 and expect an ambulance to show up. And, you know, in my area is a case in point. Every ambulance service except for two in the entire county are volunteer run and supported. And the two that have paid services, they only crew one ambulance out of three. The other ones are all staffed by volunteers. So I don't think this community realizes what it would cost to fully fund covering the entire region with a paid EMS service that provides them the amount of service they get now from volunteers.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the low pay also makes makes the position sometimes in a kind of a joke. Ambulance technician, you know, just ends up being some sort of limo driver and doesn't get a lot of respect from the hospitals because such a high turnover position, they don't, you know, they don't establish careers in that area. So all they see is new people and new people making mistakes, and they're constantly turning them over. So no one ever gets to establish their skills and stay in the area for a long time, and it just decreases the respect of the career as a whole just because there's such high turnover and people make that equation to EMTs being dumb. It's pitiful.
Well, and that's why I think we need to continue to move forward in the National Registry accreditation push. This is something that they didn't just come up with out of the blue, although a lot of people think they did. This was part of a long process that lasted several years, and I think that when you look at the process they went through to get this done, it actually took them a lot longer to come up with an idea like this and to come up with the plan to lay it out. But when what they did was give us the opportunity to continue to build the emergency services. And I've done this in the past, but I'll point to it again. You know, we all look at the kind of money nurses are making right now. Hey, I'm an RN. I know that's one of the reasons I got my RN was because the job was going to pay a lot better. But one of the things that we forget is if you look back in time at nursing as a profession, and you'll find that nurses didn't make a lot of money. Nurses were considered, quote unquote, the doctor's handmaiden, and they were considered maids, nursemaids in the hospitals. They weren't considered medical professionals, and yet they struggled for that position for a long time. And you look at the history of nursing, my eyes were opened because I look at where EMS has come in just the last 40, 50 years, and we've come a long way. We have a long way to go, but we are a very young profession. And I think that over the next 10 years or so, and this is a longer prediction, obviously, but over the next 10 years or so, the requirement for some kind of more advanced degree requirement for emergency medicine is going to push our program into the realm of what the public at large will think of as medical professionals. I think that this is important. I see we have some people identifying themselves there in the chat room. I had a question come up earlier from our friend Jonathan asking about what we thought about job prospects as he gets ready to take his EMTB test coming up here this Thursday. So first off, hey, good luck to you, Jonathan. Make sure you check back in with the Medicast. Shoot me an email to podmedic@mac.com. Let me know how you did, and I will shout it out on the show when I get the news. So it's good to hear you are moving forward and getting your test done. He was asking, Jonathan was asking about what we thought his prospects were for finding a job. There's a lot of things that come into play there, Jonathan, but you need to, I think you're not going to have difficulty getting a job to get started. You might want to look around your area and shop around a little bit. I don't know what region you're in, but generally when I look around, most agencies in my area are hiring everyone from EMTBs all the way up to paramedics. And so I think you need to kind of look around. Find out what services in your region are hiring and ask some questions. Ask some hard questions of some of the people that work for those agencies. One of the things that we forget to do when we go to a job interview is ask questions in return. A lot of us go into that situation and forget that we have the opportunity to get our questions answered as much as answer questions for a prospective employer. Now, some of that needs to be done up front, but after you've done your investigation beforehand, you might have some questions remaining that you haven't been able to get answered. And I think that you can look around and talk to some people who have worked for different agencies. Your instructors might be a good option for you there, Jonathan. Ask them which service they would recommend working for. If they're instructors, they've been around long enough to know which areas are hurting for providers and which ones pay the best. And sometimes you have to make a trade-off. sometimes you're going to make a decision that you can make less money with less headaches. So you got to decide what your pain factor is, I guess, in some cases, because you may make more money in some places, but you may run your butt off. So that's just something to consider. I see Shirley's chiming in Michigan. A lot of the private services are hurting for EMS providers, and that's in the Metro Detroit area. So Shirley, thanks for sharing that. One of the things I also looked at was some changes coming up in continuing education for emergency medical services. One of the things I think companies and services are going to start doing is more online and more on-demand type training. You know, and this is something, if you have listened to Rick Rosati's podcast, The Mitigation Journal, and he's not able to join us tonight. He's teaching the first of the semester's paramedic classes at Monroe Community College. So I'm going to give a shout out to Rick. But I think that one of the things that we're going to see is people get smarter about how they get training together and provide for continuing education. And that's because we need to make better use of our time. We've got a lot of providers out there that are working one and a half or even two jobs to make ends meet. And when do they have time to fulfill their continuing education requirements? And the answer is they just don't. So I think that we're going to see more creative use of computer-based, teleconference-based, remote and downloadable content like podcasting for people to fulfill at least some of their continuing education. And Rick talked about that with one of the emergency department physicians from the University of Rochester, and he was looking at instituting a whole video podcast program on geriatric education to provide a quick and easy way for providers to get some education, to get credit for that education, and to do so in a way that was convenient for them. Kelly, I see that you bring up something on exponential improvement in disaster preparedness. Would you like to expand upon that thought?
Yeah, well, here in California, we've been having a lot of fun practicing with our new mobile field hospitals. There's these really fancy, I don't know how much they cost, a bajillion dollars, hospitals that can be carted in on like 16, 18-wheelers, and they get set up in, I think, like a 72-hour period from any sort of disaster where all the services can't provide for all the people that may need them. And so since we've been lucky enough to kind of learn from Katrina, learn from 9/11, we've got to practice every single year. Golden Guardian helps put an event together where doctors, nurses, EMTs, technicians from all over the state come together and practice imagining there was an earthquake. And we use hundreds of volunteers to prepare for a disaster. And every year that there's not one, essentially, we get better, better, better. And everyone does it quicker, quicker, quicker every year. So I think there's a lot of other states out there that are too are learning and practicing. So I think the first couple of years are a little rusty. Everything doesn't work quite right. But now with new upcoming years, everyone is just exponentially learning from the past and getting to practice. And again, it's becoming second nature. We're learning from our past experiences and just practicing. So there will be a lot more in preparedness in 2009.
Well, I think that, you know, that's something that a lot of places are trying to do. And I've been following California's efforts in that direction, really impressed with some of the large scale things that they've been putting together. And really, on by large scale, I mean, you know, staging, you know, 1,000 people in a disaster, in an earthquake scenario, staging large scale accidents involving fires or accidents involving train wrecks and things, because they're trying to prepare for the absolute worst. California is one of the states that tends to lead sometimes in EMS, and it seems like they're heading in the right direction here as well. Nobody wants to have a disaster so much like like something like that happened in the Gulf Coast, and we all know they're still recovering from a lot of the effects of that. Not all of the hospitals are back up and running in New Orleans. The ones that are up and running are running on a reduced staff and a reduced capacity. And this is how many years later. So we are definitely not immune, any of us, to that. Some areas of the countries are more at risk for certain types of disasters than others. But certainly what Kelly talks about with that kind of major preparedness, you know, being able to move a hospital into a region, a mobile hospital like that, is impressive. And it goes along with the thought that not only is it important to have that mobile hospital, but it's important to practice with it. It's important to bring it into different communities and show your local agencies how this is going to set up. Because, you know, it's great to have a mobile hospital, but has anybody thought about where we can actually put it in a given region? You know, that's something that your local incident commander needs to know. Where, if we have a major incident, where are you going to put the big state command center that they'll be happy to bring in? But do you have a place that has the connection for it? Do you have a place that can provide communications access, that can provide all the other power access and different needs that they'll need on a long-term basis? Even if they do have generators, eventually they're going to need support for that. So these are things that if you don't practice it, you lose it. So you can have a beautiful trailer, you can have all the bells and whistles on it, but if you never open it up and practice with it, and you don't do that on a regular basis, when the time comes to open it up, no one's going to remember the combination. Is that a good representation there, Kelly?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that you can tell that just from the first year you used it. Everyone's like, and without the lessons learned, follow-up from practicing, you may make the mistakes the next time or when you have to use it for real. So you have to also do the follow-through of saying, okay, what could we have improved? And let's follow through and make sure it's better the next time.
So I think that brings us to having a prediction of better and more effective training, not just training online, but really working interagency training. And we had a good time talking with some of the guys from down at Craig Corey's service in North Carolina, talking to him about major event planning and how well they set up their system to work with local police and highway agencies to make sure that they were funneling 100,000 race fans in and out on NASCAR weekends. That basically doubled the population of their community for a period of about 5 days. And you can imagine what would happen if your community had a sudden influx of population for a very short period of time. How would you prepare for that kind of thing? So you can even take it a step farther. If someone in a neighboring region has a major disaster occur, where are those refugees going to go? Where are those people going to need to go to find shelter? And it may well be your area. They may come into your region. The local resources that come to respond, the federal resources and state resources that come to respond, may decide that your area is a good location to set up staging to go into the disaster zones. So that's something else to consider as well as you think about preparedness. It's not just preparedness for the disaster. It's preparedness for the follow-up to the disaster. As you have an influx of health workers and an influx of relief agencies, and you need to provide services for them as well. So I'm going to throw it out there as we have a few other folks in there on the line. We have a question coming up from the guest number 7. So I'm going to go ahead and bring him up on the line. Go ahead and give me, just go ahead and shout out with your first name and go ahead and bring up your comment.
Hey, Jamie, it's Chris Montero.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, no problem. Glad to have you here.
Yeah, this is good. I'm a geek at heart, and I never knew about TalkShoe. This is really good.
Oh, I do it once a month. It's a lot of fun.
Well, this is good, and I apologize for being late. Sorry about that. But
that's okay.
Boy, the content so far has been great, and, you know, I don't have much more to add. You guys have already covered a lot of good things. I think the interesting thing from the caller earlier, or the, the question earlier, at least, about graduating EMTB and, you know, looking for job prospects. Did you see that article recently? We talked about it on EMS Garage this week, about EMT being one of the worst, one of the top 10 worst careers to have.
Yeah, and it's funny because just before that, I had seen an article that was lumping, you know, generally the health services careers into the recession-proof careers, and they kind of touched on the fact that anybody involved from EMS on up was going to be affected positively, but then it turned out to be one of the worst careers, like within 3 days of that first article.
I think we all agree that it's probably not the worst career, but I don't really understand what their methodology was, other than to know that the average salary was number 9 lowest next to taxi cab driver. I will say sometimes I feel like a taxi cab driver, but I don't think that our careers are amazingly divergent from taxi cab, although we do have some of the same clientele, so, you know.
Well, it's funny, and I don't know if anybody heard it on the show a couple weeks ago. I played a spot that I picked up from my friend Irk from the IrkPod podcast in Australia. They have a great public service announcement put together by the government of New South Wales to try to reduce the overloaded use of ambulance services for what they essentially believed were taxi services. And he sent me 2 MP3 files. And Chris, I'll have to, you'll have to shoot me an email and I'll remind me, but I'll send those over to you. You can play them on your show. They're a lot of fun.
Here's a quick test. Listen to these two sounds. Which one is a taxi? Or
just drop us over there, thanks.
The first sound was an ambulance. The second was a taxi. Some people can't tell the difference. The following is based on a real 000 call.
Hello, ambulance. What's the exact address of the emergency?
Yeah, I was doing some gardening and I got a splinter in my finger. I need an ambulance.
This caller needs a taxi, not an ambulance. Using an ambulance as a taxi means paramedics may be delayed in attending a life-threatening emergency. You can help save lives. Only call 000 for an ambulance if it's an emergency. Please, don't use an ambulance as a taxi.
Oh, that's a classic. Oh, my goodness.
Of course, I'm here net going, I've had that call.
haven't we all? And inevitably, it's like 2:30 in the morning, and you're like, oh, yeah, I've had that for days. Well, what about it at 2:30 in the morning? Made it an emergency right now. Shirley on the chat said Bambulance, and I think we ought to call it Wambulance at 2:30 in the morning.
You know, it doesn't matter what you call it at 2:30 in the morning. It's still too dark and too early, but
I agree. I just want a coffee maker in the ambulance that as soon as the tones go off, by the time I hit the ambulance door, I have fresh coffee.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Wouldn't that be great? So the tones go off, it starts brewing coffee. By the time I get in, I have coffee. And then I'm a much happier person.
You know, it's funny. We were trying to put refrigerators in the back of one of our units to the fires. We provide rehab services. We're associated with a fire company, so we provide rehab services when they have a fire. And they were complaining that our water wasn't cold enough when we came out because the ice had all melted. So we said, well, we can put a small fridge in the back. We've got enough juice to run it, and we can put water bottles and keep them in there. And they said, oh, no, you guys will keep sodas and stuff in it when you're on standbys. And so what did they end up doing? They ended up putting like a half-sized Frigidaire in the rescue. And what do they keep in there? Sodas.
Oh, that would be pretty handy, I got to tell you. Whether or not you actually use it for rehab, it'd be great.
Well, you know, it's funny. Back when I was chief, before I went and got my nursing degree, one of the most popular things I did was put those like fold up lawn chairs, the fabric lawn chairs that fold up, nicely into a little carrying sack. That was the most popular thing I did the entire time I was chief. I got more compliments on those chairs you guys keep in the back of your units for when you're on standbys and when you're on rehab scenes are just fantastic.
I am going to add those to our ambulance. You know, we're actually trying to we've offloaded so much junk on our current ambulances that we have all this extra space. So I am going to put those in our ambulance starting, because we're coming up on our standby season starting in May. So we do a lot of rodeos and whatnot. So
yep.
I'm sure the crews would love that. That's a good idea, man.
I tell you what, you'll make a lot of friends. It'll be like the best idea since sliced bread. Actually, we got our local cable company contributed one set because they had some that they used for their crews when they were out working and splicing the lines, and it had their name across the back, but they had some extra ones sitting around the garage, so they donated a set of three for one ambulance, and then we just put three on each of the other ambulances for the crew. And boy, I'll tell you what, they're nice. They fold up. You can throw them in wherever you need to, along with the backboards or wherever, because they stack really nicely. And like I said, I mean, you know, from my standpoint, it was like the best $60 I ever spent.
Oh, that's great. You've got me sold. I'm doing it. Nothing better.
So there we go. Prediction for 2009. We're going to have more comfortable chairs to sit around our ambulances on.
You know, that, and if we had some ability to have the entire back of the chair lay back while we're posting. We don't post a lot, but, you know, if you could lay that chair back. Mast Ambulance in Kansas City actually extended their cab by a ton of inches. I think it was like 6 to 10 inches. So they could lay the chair almost completely back. It's like, now that's a good idea.
Well, you know, I mean, you can get those fold-up chairs that pretty darn near recline. My mom has a couple of them on her camper, so you could go that route.
Nice. I don't want them to be too comfortable, though.
Because you know you'll get caught.
Oh, of course. and I agree with Shirley, more psych patients.
Have you seen more psych patients recently?
You know, this time of year is always bad. And in Colorado, why would you have a reason to kill yourself? But it's actually one of our highest causes of death from trauma is suicide in Colorado. But, yeah, we're seeing a few more. And I think it may have something to do with the economy. Somebody loses their job, they drink too much, they want to kill themselves, they call people. Yeah, I agree, Shirley.
Yeah. Well, and it's you know, part of it's the time of year. I mean, people with, you know, I am a firm believer in seasonal affective disorder. You know, those patients that are affected by the lack of sunlight, they really can be adversely affected, especially when, you know, they might be able to handle it under normal circumstances, but the more stressors you heap on people with depression problems, the more likely they're just to tip over the edge. You know, their compensatory mechanisms just disappear very quickly when you have additional stress laid into you. And okay, Kelly, thanks for sharing with us that it's 80 degrees and sunny in LA today.
I'm sorry, you were saying like a sun, and I just couldn't help myself. I was scuba diving yesterday, saw a couple manta rays, so I'm like, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Can you mute her now? I mean, seriously, that's really, it's making me ill. It was like 5 degrees in my house this morning. Come on. I've got 3 feet of snow. All right, I'm in the basement.
Now, in all fairness to Kelly, I don't know if you knew this, Chris, but she's a ski patrol member and very active in search and rescue. So she's
okay. All right. I'll give her a little bit then. Ski patrol. How do you ski patrol in LA?
That's the beauty of where we are at. You got mountains an hour away. You got beach a half hour away. You got desert another half hour away. Welcome to spending $1 billion in a house just to be here.
Okay.
Yeah. See, there's trade-offs.
Okay.
There's pluses to all of it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Well, I'm already seeing a prediction for a more fun and jovial 2009 in the EMS community.
That's always good.
Which kind of leads into your next month, huh, Jamie?
Oh, yeah, you guys, if you look forward next month, I was getting ready to say that, and you just led right into it, Kelly. That's amazing. It's like we're on, you know, we're a whole nation apart, but yet we're on the same channel. next month's episode on the 10th of February, it's always the second Tuesday of the month, so anybody can find it, just second Tuesday of the month, 10 p.m., except during the summer months, we take those off, but because that's when it's warm and comfortable here, Kelly. We're going to be talking about We're going to be talking about humor in EMS. This is going to be, it's the first time I've done this, and I can't believe it's taken me almost 4 years to do this show. I've done some blog posts and articles about it, but we're going to be talking about our favorite fun stories in the back of the ambulance. It's going to be an opportunity for everybody to contribute and call in. We're going to be talking about general humor, some of the places you can go to find good EMS jokes, information to use in training, and also just to share the funny stories that we all have to share, because we all have them. I know if I went around the room right now in the chat room or on the phone lines here, that Chris Kelly and I could definitely come up with a few good ones right off the top of our heads.
It's a rated PG podcast.
Yeah, PG,
right?
It's after 10.
Oh, okay.
I think Emma's our only younger person here, and she just passed her first responder. So that's Airy Girl 52. She's a local person aiming at an EMS career, and she's in high school right now, but she just passed her first responder. So
we don't want you to lose that clean tag on iTunes either. So we'll keep it good. I mean, you know, some of the EMS humor is pretty. You want to make sure that people bring their good jokes and their good humor.
Oh, well, that's all right. The beauty of this is, Chris, that I record the show here, but I'm also recording it on my end. So that when I get done here tonight, I'll actually pull the both tracks together and do some editing, and this will go up in a slightly edited form so that you won't hear me pause to cough and things like that for coming up on the show Sunday. So the beauty of doing this way is that I can record it and it'll be up here in recorded form, but I'll edit it within a couple of days and have it replaced. And so if anything gets too hairy, we can always cut it out and then we can sell the unedited version.
Oh, nice. Yeah. EMT's gone wild.
Yeah. EMT unrated.
Oh, I wouldn't want to see that video.
The director's cut.
Oh, now you're talking.
Just how you say it, right?
Yeah, exactly. We'll sell you the whole seat, but all you'll need is the edge, things like that.
Well, and one of the things we want to definitely bring to the table next month as we wrap things up here tonight, but we'll talk a little bit more about next month, is I want people to bring in their favorite like catchphrases for different types of patients. I'm still laughing, and I still get a good chuckle from Kelly's phrase for what she calls a yard sale.
Yep.
Now, Chris, have you ever heard yard sale?
That one next month.
Crash and burn so hard on the ski slope that their ski equipment goes absolutely everywhere. We call it a yard sale. It's like a garage sale, and there's everything from boots to poles to hats to gloves across the entire slope.
So there's one you can drop. There's one you can drop on your friends tomorrow, Chris. You can.
That's great. Well, and I have so many friends that are ski patrollers. That's great. That's a good one.
So anyway, that's just a taste of what we'll be talking about next month. I'm going to kind of wrap things up. We're at the end here. While I have Kelly and Chris on the line, we'll start with Kelly. Do you have any final predictions or anything you'd like to say about what you're looking forward to in 2009?
Well, I see that I'm going to win the lottery in the next couple weeks. It's not a wish list. It's a prediction list. I see another great year with the podcast, with the MedicCast podcast.
Oh, thank you. And Chris?
Well, Jamie, I was just going to say the same thing. Man, Kelly, you're good. I was just going to say your podcast is really good. So I see another year of good podcasts and lots of funny humor. And I think you got to try and get Steve Barry on. Make him tell you about why he's not an ambulance driver. He's a funny thing.
You know, he's on my list of wanna interviews, and I haven't gotten around to getting in contact with him. I know you guys have talked with him. Is that right?
He lives very close to me, so give me an email. We'll hook you up.
Okay, cool.
I'll get to his personal
email. Well, maybe, you know what? Maybe we can hook him up to be on the show next month, because you know what? He would be perfect person. It's one of the things I went online and purchased his entire collection for use in my local training purposes when I'm still the training officer for my local area. So I drop those things in slideshows all the time when I'm doing training, just because he just nails it. And it takes one to know one, but if you all have never seen Steve Barry's cartoons, they are the featured cartoon panels that you see in Gems. You'll see them online in different places, and they are just amazing.
I'm not an ambulancedriver.com. I am not an ambulancedriver.com.
Let's see if I can...
Some of the funniest things ever.
Let me see if I can type and talk at the same time. I can't, so I'm not even going
to
try.
Oh, that's okay. Add it to the show notes. I'm not an ambulancedriver.com. But no, Jamie, seriously, thank you for talking to me. We're going to have you on the garage soon, and boy, I'm gonna tune in. It's in my calendar now to listen to this every month. I like the online version or the live version here. This is good. This is really good.
Thank you
so much.
Well, and thank you for joining us. And you know, anytime, shoot me an email and we'll hook up on when you guys record, and I'll make sure I make some time to come on and be on the show. And I will definitely get in touch with you about touching base with Steve and getting him on the show next week. That would just be awesome.
Hey, no problem. But thanks a lot, Jamie. And I'll hang up and listen to the rest of it online. Thanks a lot, man.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to let everybody head out. It's been almost an hour now, so we're going to get ready to close out the show. My final prediction, and this is something that I really, it's I guess more of a wish list, like Kelly said before, but my final prediction really and wish is that all of you remain safe and healthy throughout the coming year, that you continue to find the resources here at the MedicCast useful to you, whether you're a student or an existing provider. And if you're moving on and looking to become a nurse, go ahead and listen to my other show, The Nursing Show, and learn what you need to learn over there as well. In the meantime, you can find information about this show and how to contact me by heading over to medicast.com. And while you're there, you'll see a list of all of our programs. You can click on the button there to join the Medicast blog, and you'll find information in the show notes about everything we've discussed in this episode, at least links to some of our people that have joined us here, including Chris from the EMS Garage podcast. You know, if you haven't checked that podcast out, I highly recommend that you head out and check it out. That's it for me. I'm going to close out now. I want to thank everybody that joined us in the chat room, and of course, Kelly and Chris for joining me on the phone lines. And I will leave you, as I always do, by reminding all of you to remember scene safety, BSI.
Here's a quick test. Listen to these two sounds. Which one is a taxi? Or...
Just drop us over there, thanks.
The first sound was an ambulance. The second was a taxi. Some people can't tell the difference. The following is based on a real 000 call.
Hello, ambulance. What's the exact address of the emergency?
Yeah, I've had a toothache for 6 days and I need an ambulance.
This caller needs a taxi, not an ambulance. Using an ambulance as a taxi means paramedics may be delayed in attending a life-threatening emergency. You can help save lives. Only call 000 for an ambulance if it's an emergency. Please, don't use an ambulance as a taxi.